Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast.
Nuevo.
Nueve. Nuevo.
Is it Nuevo so. Or Nueve?
Nueve. Nueve, yeah, Nueve.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nuevo
I'm not
means
quite fluent in Spanish yet.
That's evident. And you're looking to skip ahead to Portuguese.
Yeah, you know, Sean, not looking to. You and I are definitely going to learn Portuguese.
Are we?
When okay. I found out about A, how popular American football is in Portugal, and B, how good Brazilian barbecue is. That happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
Then we're going to go ahead and we're going to become, you and I are going to become the sports radio voices of Brazilian
anything.
American football fans.
Yeah, anything. Yeah. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, the food. All right. So, Ipe Mizuhara, the translator for Shohei Ohtani, the affidavit was released yesterday. And this was, I don't know, man, for me, like, this was some fun reading. Now, I didn't read the whole affidavit. I read a great, the Athletic has a really good summary of this because it couches it in the form of questions like, what did we learn? Why did this happen? How much was he gambling? Really easy to kind of follow. I think my biggest takeaway is, look, we'll get to the actual amount that this dude was gambling. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling when you break it down on a per-day basis. Just how much gambling this guy was doing, and how could he focus on anything else? The text messages between Mizuhara and Shohei and Mizuhara and the bookie, Matthew Boyer, are tremendous. I think the overall takeaway here, because the overall takeaway with the story, Seth, in light of the fact that I think there was a lot of skepticism about Shohei not knowing that Mizuhara was gambling, not knowing that the money was leaving his accounts, a lot of skepticism about that.
Yeah.
Things that I think you and I both said are all possible. Like, it's people get money stolen all the time, you know, in different amounts from their accounts.
Especially,
and like that.
I've just seen professional athletes and, like, the level of, I think people are incredulous that somebody would have so little oversight or pay so little attention to how much money was in their accounts or coming or going. And I just, like, I not to this degree, but I've been there myself and done it. And I've seen so many other guys that have been grossly negligent when it comes to, because there's a rich people who get rich by being good with money. Yes, those people would never allow something like this to happen. Rich people who get rich by doing something else that doesn't involve money, you'd be amazed at like how little money, like financial sense, like some of them either have or care to exercise because it's extra energy.
Well, and just how big a blind spot it is for them.
Yeah,
you know? Like
yeah.
That's and so. My big takeaway from this after going through the summaries of the affidavit that summarize all the pertinent parts to this whole thing is that I think this is the story. I think the story that was ultimately told, you know, they shifted to this story as well, too. I think that casts some doubt that it started with Mizuhara saying that Shohei loaned him the money, and then the story flipped to what I feel is the truth now, that he did steal the money based on everything. The digital trail of conversations between everybody, thousands of pages worth of text messages where they've been combed through by the FBI, is that Ipe stole about $16 million from Shohei Ohtani, and he's now cooperating. Ipe is cooperating with the feds, trying to get as minimal a sentence as he possibly can, it feels like.
Yeah, and it's as simple as, really, at the base of all of it, it's that this interpreter was Shohei Ohtani's voice in a lot of respects, yeah, and was able to pass himself off as Ohtani. Without having to forge anything, without having to, well, he probably forged something, but like the, just by virtue of being the interpreter, people just trusted that what they were hearing was what Ohtani was doing. Even the bookie himself, it seems, based on the text messages, did think that Ohtani was actually the guy making the bets, but it's also obvious that he was never actually told that. He just assumed it, you know? And so when people say, well, how did he keep extending this credit to an interpreter? Well, because he thought it was coming from Ohtani, and the money kept coming. Like, yeah. It was as simple as that.
Yep.
We all, as the public was duped by Ohtani's interpreter, they were simultaneously asking, how could somebody get duped like this?
Right.
Because you're like, oh, you heard this first story from Ohtani's interpreter, and you wanted to believe it. And then all of a sudden, when you find out it might be different, you're like, well, nobody would be stupid enough to fall for this interpreter stuff. Like, yeah. No, we all just did. We all did.
This is from the ESPN summary of the affidavit, the article kind of summarizing everything. It says on March 20th, 2024, after the news broke that at least $4.5 million had been transmitted from Ohtani's account to Boyer's operation, Mizuhara texted Boyer, the bookie, asking whether he had seen the media reports. The bookmaker replied, yeah, that's all bull bleep. Obviously, yeah, you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it. Mizuhara replied, technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me.
Yeah, technically. What a technicality.
Yeah.
That's like a woman walking in on her husband cheating on him and him being like, well, technically you caught me with my pants down.
Right.
Yes. Everything is true. Every little bit is true.
And it's all over for me.
It's all over for me. I got to tell you, that's a pretty good line. I like that he went down like that.
Yeah, he's very self-aware. It's all over for me.
He was going to get killed. I wonder if there was a part of him that thought that like he was just gonna disappear in the night or something.
Oh, okay. If he did, who would be doing it? Ohtani's people or the bookies? Do you think?
I feel like the interpreter was the only one with access to the funds to do it.
Yeah.
So like it wouldn't.
He was protected.
Shohei comes to him and is like, I'd really like to have you assassinated, but I don't know how to do it. I don't speak English.
Ipe,
can you go out and find somebody for me?
What's the dumbest thing you did throughout this whole ordeal, Ipe? Probably paying for the hitman to kill me, I would say, out of Shohei's account. You know, a lot of dumb things, you know.
How about this, though? Can you imagine, Sean, imagine that you wake up and you realize you've stolen $14 million from somebody who considers you a very close friend.
Yeah.
And that you've got absolutely nothing to show for it.
Right.
Like, because it's all been to feed this gambling beast. So it's like, not only did I do one of the most deplorable things anybody could ever do to a friend, it's not like I even really genuinely personally benefited from
it
at all. You know, it just, oh my God.
What did you do? I bought a roller coaster. You know, like, okay, well, that's really dumb, and you probably paid retail for this roller coaster,
yeah,
but we can at least recoup something here, Ipe.
At least, and you've got the memories, the fond memories.
Of riding like,
you know, he probably doesn't have a... Once he started stealing money from Shohei, he probably doesn't have a single fond memory of gambling on sports.
Oh, God, no.
You know, like, it's not like everything he did, he was just trying to make back what he'd already lost. Whenever his losing streak started was the last... like. Whatever his previous stopped. Whenever this losing streak started is when he stopped ever enjoying gambling on sports.
Yes.
And he was stealing money from his buddy to do it.
Yeah, it's a horrible feeling. Paying your bookie is a terrible feeling. All right,
you guys, like, think about all the things you could have done with that money.
No, dude, waking up the morning you know you've got to go pay is like, I thought that was a dream, but it's not. Now, I was never in a seven-figure hole, ever. But man, wow. So
I get this image of you, like, I think, is it in Pineapple Express where at the beginning Seth Rogen is talking, he calls in the radio show and he's talking about how like, the worst part of like, the worst part of how they've demonized pot is that you have to deal with drug dealers. It's like, you don't consider yourself a criminal, but you got to go deal with drug dealers.
Yeah.
Like, did you feel like that as a legal sports gambler?
I always enjoyed the people I dealt with, but but it was just the idea of like what you just said, like, okay, I'm going to have to cough up this money, and all I have to show from it is 3 days worth of stress that's probably put a crater in my lower intestine the size of a golf ball, you know?
That's tough, man.
Yeah. So, Ipe, he stole the $16 million. Here, my two favorite parts of this whole affidavit summary were the part where Ipe is clearly really getting in over his head and he starts ghosting the bookie. Like, before, he and the bookie had a very cordial relationship, and why not? You're making millions off of this Ipe guy. Why wouldn't they? And he's paying, you know?
The bookie is so nice.
He's paying, yeah.
Drop off a check for $100,000, he's totally cool about everything. Yeah.
Smiles. He gives me his wiring information. It makes it really easy for me. Yeah. So, but it reached a point where clearly Ipe was getting in a little over his head. November of 2023 would be that time. And he had been ghosting this bookie. And the bookie texts to him one day, "Hey, Ipe. It's 2:00 on Friday. I don't know why you're not returning my calls. I'm here in Newport Beach and I see Shohei walking his dog. I'm just going to go up and talk to him and ask how I can get in touch with you since you're not responding. Please call me back immediately." And that's one of those things that is, to use your analogy, Seth, about like getting caught having an affair. That is one of those things. Oh, maybe I'll just go tell your wife.
You know, like,
you know what? I'm at a Starbucks. I see your wife over here. You're ghosting me. Maybe I'll just tell her that you're banging me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's right here, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And like, this is one of those moments, too, where it's like, all right, wait a second. Is this blackmail or extortion or what have you? Except that you've got no recourse. You're totally
illegal.
The criminal here, too. Yeah. You're just, that is a desperate, desperate moment to be in.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
This guy.
Good chess move by Boyer, I would say. I don't think he was with an eye shot of Shohei. I think he was lying to Ipe, but it's not a bad chess move to try to get Ipe, you know.
Ipe didn't even
come out of the woodwork
until later the next day. So yeah. I wonder if he knew. Maybe he just texted. For all I know with Ipe might have had the Life 360 on Shohei's phone.
Oh, and he knew. You know, for sure.
Do you
great
think
point.
The level to which Ipe could have basically. This is where I'm Shohei Ohtani. Sure, the money sucks to lose that much money, but the other part of me is like, what other areas of my life has this guy been representing himself as me? And like, where do I have like how many online porn subscriptions do I have?
I
never signed up for.
This is a great subtopic here. Which one would worry you the most? The money would be the most worrisome for like losing millions of dollars. Obviously, is terrible. Like, what of the ones that. Aside from the money, which would be the most worrisome to you?
A brothel. If he had set up an account at a freaking brothel and whatever a modern day Heidi Fleiss, and this woman knows that all these payments are coming from Shohei Ohtani or something, and like Ipe is like, yeah, he takes care of me, he likes me, but then all that happens is like the news gets released. Oh yeah, by the way, Ohtani also. Like any of those activities that would be obviously super embarrassing and damaging. He did it beyond gambling. There was the trading card scenario. Like there's gonna be more.
Dude.
I will be very surprised if this bastard Mitsuhara like it didn't wheedle his way into multiple different ventures and everything in the name of Ohtani.
Dude, it could get to some really dark places. You know what I mean? Like if this guy's surfing porn sites that are illegal, you know, like I'm talking like illegal stuff.
Yeah, like anything
that
he's doing with Ohtani's credit card.
ID. And I'm to be clear, I'm not saying he is doing these things. We're painting hypotheticals here.
But that's where my mind would go if I were Ohtani. Like, wait a second.
What else?
The guy had unfettered access to my accounts. Although a couple points like, Mitsuhara did have to work his butt off to get some of these wires to go through.
Yes.
Like, it started to raise red flags. But, like, the number of... How many texts were there? How many pages
there
of texts
were there? There were, like, 9,000 pages worth of texts. It was
9,000 pages worth of texts where there was no mention at all of gambling between Ohtani and Mitsuhara. All of the people... Like,
and no mention of baseball being gambled on as well,
right.
Which I find total... Like,
That was the one thing. The one saving grace for Mitsuhara is that he never gambled on baseball.
It's a miracle he never gambled on baseball. I mean, we're talking about a guy, Seth, who is millions and millions in debt. I've seen people do way, way more sketchy things, like in terms of like affecting sport for way lower dollar amounts than that, you know?
The whole thing is, though, and that's where you wonder and worry about, is he might, like, the way out wouldn't have been for him to gamble on baseball. It would have been for him to provide information.
Yeah.
And that's the other part, again, that, you know, like, what do you, like, Ohtani, what are you going to do, pinch Ohtani for hanging out with gamblers? Because you can do that if it's illegal gambling or what have you. But he didn't even know. Like, he genuinely didn't know that any of this was going on.
Yeah.
That's the part. Yeah, I would imagine it feels like all the big questions are answered with all of this information about Ohtani's potential involvement or non-involvement.
Yep.
But I think there's 10 times as many more details that'll be fascinating.
In reviewing approximately 9,700 pages of text messages between Ohtani and Mitsuhara between 2020 and 2024, quote, there was no discussion of sports betting between Mitsuhara and Ohtani. In addition, no text about Ohtani wanting to keep his accounts private from his agent and advisors, which Mitsuhara had been telling Ohtani's agents and advisors that, no, Shohei wants to keep these accounts private.
Yeah.
You can't have access. He wants those to be private. And Ohtani's phone showed no record that he had accessed the illegal gambling website account under Mitsuhara's name. So there's no digital trail from Ohtani's phone of going and placing bets under an account with Mitsuhara's name on it. So
what Ohtani? I wonder what Ohtani feels or understands about like the magnitude of it all. Because I don't know how much American media he consumes. I would imagine, like in America, there's going to be a whole lot of people who are anti-Dodgers that just flat out wanted this to be true. I mean, like, so many people were like convinced that Ohtani needed to be banned from baseball immediately and what have you. Whereas I would imagine the treatment in Japan would be different, because there's no team bias necessarily at play or anything like that.
He's a hero.
He's
over
a national hero in some regards. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't even fully realize how much of a kerfuffle it's caused.
He may not, man. Like he seems pretty oblivious to anything not involving baseball. Like that's,
obviously.
It's yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The very thing that led him into this mess might actually protect him mentally and emotionally.
Right. From his mental health. Yeah.
His ability to completely close out so many things in his life.
Epalytics. How much was he gambling? Well, funny you should ask. 25 bets per day, they calculate, ranging, this is my favorite part, from $10 to $160,000. I still want those to be on the same phone call. Like that deep down, I want to hear a recording of a phone call of Ipe Mizuhara calling his bookie and saying, give me $10 on the Packers, give me $10 on the 49ers, give me $160,000 on the Patriots, and give me $10 on the Eagles. That's what I want to hear.
Maybe he thought he was playing like three-dimensional chess, like he was, because he was such a heavy gambler at this point that he might make the line move somehow.
So,
maybe people are monitoring all my bets because they know I'm a heavy bettor, so I'm going to bet $10 on this one.
This is the part that gives me agita. He gambled enough to where he won $142 million. This is over just a few years. This isn't over a lifetime.
Yeah,
he gambled enough to where he won $142 million, lost $183 million. So the net loss was a little under $41 million. Like, he gambled enough to where he was either winning or losing a grand total of over $300 million over the course of 3 years.
At any given point, he could have been one of these people that just builds up a huge online advice presence just by showing the winnings.
Yeah.
You know, showing nothing but the winnings tickets.
They would never do that.
I'll show my $142 million in winnings.
Yeah.
And for the most part, a lot of people, enough people are convinced by that. They're not like, yeah, but let me show the losses. Let me see the losses, yeah.
That would be great if he did that, but he did that under Shohei's name. Like, all of a sudden, people are like, wow, Shohei Ohtani is like a tout right now. He won $140 million gambling.
I'll tell you another thing. Immediately where my civic-minded brain goes is, how was the total volume on that, on all those bets?
Like $320 million total.
I think immediately, like, think of that tax revenue. Like, that's illegal gambling. That's illegal gambling that the revenue should have been taxed somehow.
Seth Payne.
And yet it wasn't. Yeah.
Municipality hero. That's
why
you
should legalize gambling right there, right alone. $300 million of commerce going on without the public at large getting any of their share.
Wake up, Texas. Exactly. All right, so what's our anxiety level about the Astros? I actually put up a poll about this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I've been eagerly awaiting the preliminary results.
I know you won't, but don't look at it. If you want to vote on it, at Sean T. Pendergast, the question is simple. Is the dynasty over? Is the castle coming down? Yes or no? Where do the people stand? What is the freakout level on the Astros early in the season here? That is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so I would say if you're an Astros fan and you're freaking out a little bit, I'm cool with that. Like this is like DEFCON 1 or 2 kind of stuff right now with the pitching staff. You know, I think they've got the talent to turn it around. They got to get some guys back. Hopefully that this Fromber thing is not anything more severe than just inflammation that goes down and he's pitching again in a few weeks. Who knows? We'll see. But right now it's tough. And you've seen three out of your last four games, you've had your starting pitcher give up just a deluge inning. Two of them in the first inning. Blair Henley on Monday and then Hunter Brown yesterday. Gave up 9 runs yesterday, Hunter Brown did. And then obviously Spencer Arrighetti did the bullpen the service of at least giving them 3 innings to rest before they came in. But Astro fans are understandably nervous. So I put up a poll and wow. Okay. Here we go. Pender poll. Is the Astros dynasty over? Simple question, Seth. Is the Astros dynasty over? Yes or no? We're several hundred votes in. I just put it up about 45 minutes ago.
Oh, boy.
What are you thinking here?
Let me guess. I'm going to guess right now, when put into terms like that, most people are going to step back and say, wait a second. No, I can't close the door on not just this season, but an entire era this early in this season. So I'm going to guess that 70% said no.
Your spidey senses are not on today, my friend.
Oh, boy.
You're usually really good at this game.
I'm
yeah.
a little too naive about people's capacity for negativity.
In the internet. Yeah.
Yes.
yes is the winner. 58%.
Okay.
58-42. 58% of the several hundred people who voted say that the dynasty is over.
That's a landslide by presidential standards, but not in the polling world.
I
wouldn't say that's too close to a coin flip right now.
Okay.
Where people are either they're right on the fence as a group as to whether or not this dynasty is over.
It would seem you're clearly a no, right? You're
yeah, well, I'm a no, but in like a way where I can like. Conclusively, I can't say that it's not over.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, this is how all dynasties end eventually,
mm-hmm.
right? Is it something that looks exactly like this? I do think that there's some things maybe I'm clinging way too much to the Astros having the second best strikeout rate offensively. That I feel like, you know what? For one,
that is something.
Offensive, they might be 20th in runs per game right now. And yet, there's evidence and signs that they'll be just fine offensively. The biggest issue and problem I think about when it comes to long term is that yes, you've got all these guys who are on the injured list for your starting pitchers. That's a problem. The problem is though that like if we're talking in dynastic terms, Verlander ain't going to be around here for the rest of the dynasty.
No,
you know, we're not really genuinely going to rely on Lance McCullers, right, for the rest of the dynasty.
Yeah.
We don't really know what we have in Luis Garcia or Jose Urquidy, really. So, yeah, like just hoping that Framber, who might not be around for the rest of the potential dynasty also. Yeah, there's warts and blemishes here for a team that's spending the third most money in baseball right now. Yeah, so I get a little bit nervous, but I wouldn't call it over.
Yeah. To me, like, this is, much as we poke fun at 162-game guy, like that's a question where you do go, okay, it is 14 games. Like, that's different than can they win the division? You know, like, I am feeling like this might be a wild card team this year, maybe not a division winner like we were expecting.
Yeah,
only because other than Verlander, there really are no reinforcements in sight for the pitching staff. You know what I mean? And there's no solution at first base in sight unless they decide to call up Loper Fido and give him a go at first base at some point here. That's the thing, is there's not a lot of dry powder for you to go get solutions outside the organization. You know, like, if you had to replace Framber Valdez, you can't replace Framber Valdez with Spencer Arrighetti for the season. You know, like, if you're trying to replace him, truly replace him, you are now starting to scour other teams' rosters to go, okay, is this team going to be a buyer or a seller at the trade deadline?
I think where they really have lost their edge in a lot of ways is just whatever they've lost with Brent Strom being out of the building. Like, I think that's been a cumulative process where just from you chip away a little bit one year, then the next year you see a little bit more. Maybe that's it. And then I think the other thing is just the edge that the Astros had in Latin American scouting forever and were so good at, I just feel like that's dried up and gone away. Like, yeah. Some of the pitchers we have right now are some of the last guys that are these guys that Luno and his staff found by looking into every nook and cranny, signing, you know, over-the-hill prospects like Framber Valdez. I don't see those guys coming back up, you know, and that's where the steady degradation of the bolt or of the pipeline is what worries me more than anything.
We have a really good text about Jim Crane that we got just a second ago. But before we read this, Ben, do we have the Reggie Jackson? Okay, here was Reggie Jackson on John Heyman's podcast. John Heyman, longtime baseball writer. He was asked about making decisions like the Blake Snell non-signing, the Alex Bregman contract extension. How does that happen? And Reggie Jackson kind of laid out what the leadership team looks like for the Astros.
We have a great leadership group with our GM. Also, we have a couple of other advisors in Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell, who are very much involved in our decision-making. I'm involved. Jim takes those decisions and puts them together, listens to our management and coaching staff on the field, talks to our GM and his staff, and then, of course, some of the analytics come into the future of a player, and our decisions are made that way, along with being fiscally responsible.
Okay, so this is a committee. Really, I mean, if we're taking Reggie Jackson at face value there, like, this is not a GM who's empowered by the owner to go do what you need to do to go either rebuild parts of the team or build parts of the team. That's the picture that's painted right there. The text message, Seth, 6249, do you think Crane was hands-off at first but was so humiliated by the cheating scandal that he's gone too far in the opposite direction, almost too involved now, needs a damn committee?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. And, you know, we've seen this happen in situations that don't involve any scandal, but when an owner wants to let the experts do their thing, you know, you want to let the coach and the GM do what they're good at and try to stay out of it as much as possible. And you try to be hands off, and then all of a sudden everything has spun way out of control. I think that with the Astros, it wasn't just the being better than everybody else scandal. Remember, it was the clubhouse incident after the World Series.
Brandon Todman.
Like, I think there were things that you could point to and say, all right, Luno, as brilliant as he is in some respects, needs more oversight on other areas, maybe especially involving the human side of things.
Yeah.
Or the complying with MLB memos side of things,
right.
Whatever. Like,
right.
Distribute a damn memo, okay?
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's where that's probably like a very, if I put myself in Jim Crane's shoes, that's where I would step in and say like, all right, well, crap, I gotta be more hands on here apparently.
Well, and this is when he started bringing in a bunch of outside voices too. You know, that's when he started leaning more on guys like Bagwell and Reggie Jackson. And now Biggio's name is getting mixed in here. He's part of the mix. And I have great respect for all three of those guys, for the players that they were. And for obviously they're all three very smart baseball people. Being a smart baseball person and making decisions in 2024 about building a 2024 baseball team, a baseball team built for this age, are two very different things. And I think to myself, a couple of things. One, like, okay, how much can I even blame Dana Brown for stuff that goes on with this team now, knowing it's been confirmed by one of these guys here publicly what we all suspected, which is there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen with this thing. Even coming off of the ratchet-ass offseason they had last year with Bagwell flying down to go pluck Jose Abreu from the White Sox. So I don't know how much I can even blame Dana Brown if he's dealing with, like, four other people on making decisions. And my other thing is, how many other teams are doing this? Like, how many other teams have their decision-making structure in a way that you've got three legends sitting in the room opining on this stuff and having influence on this stuff as opposed to empowering the GM to go build a damn baseball team?
Right. Yeah, like, is it exactly at which point? It's one thing. It's tough whenever you put people between the owner and the GM when it comes to decision-making. And, like, is that... We have no idea how it actually works or anything, but I feel like the way that I imagine it, or the way that it's being presented by some people, it's almost like, no, it's not like Dana Brown reports directly to Jim Crane. It's that he reports directly to him. Well, Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson are also evaluating what Dana Brown is saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know that's, and maybe that's completely wrong. That's the impression that I get.
I need someone to draw for me what this looks like on an org chart. You know what I mean? Like, what does this look like? Like, who reports to who? Like, who's got the power? Like, you kind of laid it out earlier. Like, okay, is it this thing where Bagwell's got 38% of the vote and Reggie Jackson's got 20%? Like, what is the process here for this stuff?
Yeah.
And are there certain decisions? Is there, like, a level of decision where we'll let Dana go do all that stuff, you know, like the draft or whatever, or, you know, bringing guys up and down from the minor leagues? But then there's just certain decisions, like Blake Snell. Let's hear from Reggie Jackson on Blake Snell. Are there certain decisions that are above a line where now you got to get all the chefs involved in the whole thing?
Being fiscally responsible, I think, is what kicked us out of the Snell deal. He signed a 2-year deal, I want to say, for 62. That's too much for him. He's been hurt a couple of times. And I think there's incentives on top of that. He's also got an option on his own. And between the four or five people that make the decisions with the Astros, we don't play that game.
Wait, what did he say about the phone at the end? The option on his phone?
He has an option on his deal. Blake Snell has an opt out after year one. Like his deal has that thing that Jim
Crane
makes.
I didn't hear what he said. I couldn't hear what he said after the opt out. But yeah. Okay. That podcast, by the way, is not saving baseball. When I watched a little bit of John Heyman talking to Reggie Jackson, whoever the other old guy.
Oh, you mean like the
there.
Energy level of it or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not saving baseball.
No.
The Blake Snell thing, as far as that money, right? The problem is the Blake Snell deal wasn't prohibitive. It was all of the other deals like Jose Abreu that make the Blake Snell deal prohibitive,
right?
I think.
Too pricey for us. Too pricey for us, yeah.
And it's hard because it's not like the Astros are being cheap. It's that we run into that situation sometimes where you want to accuse the owner of being cheap when, in fact, he spent a lot of money, just not in all the spots that would have been more effective to spend it.
Yep.
And, which means that you can't do things like the Blake Snell deal.
I'm more scared about the big picture than I am the 2024 season. I think they're going to end up winning a bunch of baseball games. I just don't know. I don't know about this construct moving forward. Clearly the answers do not exist in the minor league level for this team right now. And you got guys that may not be Astros just because they may leave after this season or next season. It's a teetering time now, man.
What if Jeff Luhnow comes walking through that door?
Be great.
What if all of a sudden, do you think it would happen?
No, there's not a chance.
He was a great GM. But the part with Luhnow that, you know, I always wondered was, okay, what is it going to be like when you get to this portion? Like, this is the hardest part. As impressive as everything he did was, like, what do you do to sustain it? That's really, really hard to do and maintain.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a slam dunk that Luno would have been good at it.
Yep.
It's just that there are different modes of operation when you're on the up and when you're trying to stabilize.
We were deprived of that, for sure, by the sign-stealing punishment. All right, Tom Brady was on a podcast. Tom Brady, don't do this, man. Do not do this. Do not do this Brett Favre thing it looks like you might be doing. That's next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And you always hope when a legend retires that there's something about it where, especially when he's retired one time already and come back, that he doesn't turn into that guy who's always coming back. Brett Favre, probably the gold standard for that. I thought, yeah. Tom Brady, Seth, might be above that, but maybe not. Tom Brady was on the Deep Cut podcast and was asked about the possibility of playing football again.
One day there's a situation, right? Maybe it's the 49ers, maybe, you know, heading to the playoffs, offense is great.
Patriots, somebody, Raiders, look, could be, you never know.
God forbid somebody goes down, would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're going to let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if, I don't know, I'm always going to be in good shape, always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Okay.
Let me do that. Let me do a recoil at the very end there. I felt like I just have to, as he's going into sports broadcasting, let's not mischaracterize MJ coming back. Like, it says like dipping your toe in for a little bit or what have you.
Yeah.
That was more than just like him coming in at the end of a season or something.
Right.
So maybe if he's talking about I don't think he wants to relive the Wizards years.
I would think not.
Of Michael Jordan, right? So other than that, I wonder in Brady's mind, if somebody were to ask me that question, like at the age of 49, hey, Seth, would you rule out a comeback? In my mind, what I would think is, like, obviously, unless, like, medical advancements just all of a sudden took, like, a light year's jump ahead, and that you could just regrow every single little injury that you've ever had in your body and be fresh as a daisy. I think that Brady's a little bit closer to that reality than I would be, because he just retired, but... I don't know. He might be thinking, yeah, in the right circumstance, and if maybe the TB12 diet got some help from, you know, German genetics or something. I don't know. Yeah.
He, dude, he just retired last year. He's almost the same age as you. Like, that's crazy.
I know. Yeah.
It's wild. That is just wild to me. Like, he is a physical marvel. There's no question.
He hasn't had
about
the
it.
Same level of trauma to his body, and he's not playing the same position. That's the biggest difference, is that quarterbacks, he knows, because he came into the league back when you were still allowed to hit quarterbacks.
Yeah.
He knows just how cushy it's gotten as a quarterback.
He's a big reason they can't get hit, because of that knee injury in 2008.
Yeah. And I think that's part of he probably always thinks that, is like, yeah, I actually have learned a lot, and in the right circumstances, then it might be all right.
You know who I feel for when I hear that cut? Because Brady, in that cut, like, I don't think he sounded dismissive or like he was. Sometimes you see these quotes, Seth, and you like you see him and you go, oh my God, yeah. Brady's doing this Brett Favre thing. And then you listen to him, you're like, okay, well, that you need to listen to it, not just read the transcript of it. I don't know, man. Like, on a level of seriousness on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is like he's joking around and 10 is he's Brett Favre, I think he's a 5. Like, I don't think he's totally dismissing it there.
No, I think he really believes that it would have to be the ideal scenario, but he doesn't think that the ideal scenario doesn't exist.
Right.
Like, there is that right spot where if I don't, you know what? If it's somehow, let's say it was the Chiefs and they make it to the playoffs and all of a sudden Pat Mahomes gets injured.
Yeah.
You know, would he go on into that situation and see what he could do with it? Maybe that's not the perfect scenario because the system would be a little bit different. The 40, what?
What about here?
What
if something, he knows Nick Caserio, you know?
The only thing that's tricky or dicey is that for him, ideally, it would be dropping down into a system that with which he's familiar.
Which isn't this.
An OC or something. And there's not nearly as many of those as there are Kubiak-Shanahan systems.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting. Like, the host of that podcast named the 49ers, and I thought Brady might, like, pump the brakes on, like, hey, let's not do specific teams. I don't want Brock Purdy to have to think about this, or whoever's quarterback for the Raiders, or certainly Brady proactively brings up the Raiders and the Patriots. Like, what the hell? Like, Patriots are going to draft Jaden Daniels or Drake May, and they're going to walk in the door with half these chouds thinking that Brady's coming back in week 14 or something like that.
What do you think the response in New England would be if they, like, announced at a press conference? When Brady's supposed to have a ceremony in June honoring him up in New England, what if instead he walked out and he's wearing a uniform and they said, Brady's coming back? I would say, if I know New England people the way I think I know New England people, not Patriots fans, but just New Englanders in general, I would say that he would get booed by 70% of them.
Do you think?
I think they would be, I think they'd be like, no, that's garbage. You're just trying to relive the past.
If they didn't suck so badly right now, I might agree with you, but they're bad. Yeah. Like those Patriot fans are probably desperate for anything to get them good. I did text Ted just now, Ted Johnson, our good friend, Patriot legend, former host here at Sports Radio 610. Who's up in Boston now doing radio, to see if this is a topic up there today. Brady.
Say? He hasn't texted
back yet, but I'm curious.
Probably too busy talking about this topic.
About Brady. Hey, you mentioned this. They're doing a ceremony for Brady in June up there? Didn't they just do one last season?
That's what I thought. I didn't understand what that was.
Is he demanding one where Belichick's actually not in the building for it, maybe? Like, I want another ceremony with no Belichick there.
I don't know. I guess the one maybe in June. Okay, so it's the Patriots Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
Okay.
Starting at 7 p.m. on June 12th.
Okay.
And lasts until 9:30.
Okay. Ugh. Well, that's more than I need to know.
I didn't know if you wanted to go or not. I was going to let you know. That's exactly what you're getting yourself into.
I'm good. I'm too busy trying to get our Texans Kiosk of Fame off the ground here. You know, I can't be beholden to other teams' halls of fame. Yeah.
Just one more detail about this.
Yeah.
I'll hand it to Bob Kraft. He's not trying to turn this into some hoity-toity affair that only VIPs are allowed in. Because they're actually going to – there's a preferred rate of $36 for season ticket holders. And I think they're having it at the actual stadium.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's in the stadium. Okay.
So he's going to make some good money off of it. Never mind.
Yeah.
It's not a hoity-toity affair, but it's still a money-making affair.
Oh, yeah, money grab for sure. Hey, how about Hannah McNair getting some headline treatment on NFL.com? Like, one of the top headlines on NFL.com.
For her comments about winning?
For her comments about winning, yeah. Texans, Hannah McNair, on team's active offseason, quote, "We want to win now." If you missed it, here were Hannah and Cal with Randy McAvoy of Channel 2 yesterday.
Our boys, when they heard the Stephon Diggs news, were screaming around the house, and then their friends said their teacher stopped class to tell everyone. So there's quite a buzz amongst the younger generation about the guys that we brought in. So that's exciting.
And we embrace the expectations. That's where we want to be. And at the same time, it's about building the team and the team being coached and working hard. It's the day-to-day things that are going to get us where we want to get to, but we've got to stay focused and work hard every day to bring about where we want to go.
And we want to win now.
Hey, hey, Sean, can we send that clip up to that little kid in Buffalo who's crying about Stephon Diggs getting traded?
Yeah.
It was the loving parent who put her sobbing child on social media when she informed her diehard Bills fan son. Looked to be about, like, what, 4 years old?
Oh, yeah, like pre-K, kindergarten age.
Four or five
age.
Or something, I don't know. He didn't have all his teeth, I don't know.
Yeah.
She told him that that Stephon Diggs was getting traded, and the kid started bawling. And then he asked for what, and his mom was like, a 2025 second round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, really twisting the knife.
Yeah.
And the poor kid, he's famous on social media because his loving, loving mother put him out there.
I love that kid. That kid, he at one point, he's crying, and he goes, "What's next, Josh Allen?"
Yeah.
I'm like, I looked at that. I said, this kid is ready for adulthood right here. He's got the what's next thing going perfectly. You are ready for a tortured, tormented adulthood.
I liked that he was really young, but understood the concept of a trade, knew enough to ask what the compensation was,
yes.
Was confused by the compensation. It was, that's a pretty smart little kid right there.
I know. He should be on the
radar. I feel
like
I want to interview him, except I also don't want to encourage, you know, putting out photos of your emotionally distraught children clicks, you know.
He should be on the radar, the GM radar, man. Like, this kid's, he's a prodigy. He's 6 years old, and he's wondering what the compensation was in the Stephon Diggs trade.
Sammy and James were really, like way into sports early on, right? And they were bright like that. They kind of, like, knew a lot of stuff when they were still, like, 10 years old or younger.
Yeah, dude, yeah. Sammy, they used to, when I first moved down here to get into media, it was 2007, so they were, like, eight. You know, James might have been 8 or 9. Sammy was a year younger, and they would come down. They'd fly down for the draft every year to watch the draft with me because they love the draft. Yeah, like, they were super smart sports. They still are, yeah.
Did they get really emotional like that when they were little over stuff?
Oh, boy. What did? Yeah,
is there anything
probably
that, like, broke their hearts and, like, you had to explain to them the cruelty of the real sports world?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think if there were any trades like that. There were certainly games like that. Like, you know, like, they were big. They're not anymore. They were big Notre Dame fans when they were kids. They branched out on their own now, and now they torment me about Notre Dame football. So that's nice to see. But yeah,
have they learned about Michael Jordan's divorce yet? Is that are they let down by the legend of Michael Jordan's? Okay,
no. I like Hannah's moxie though, man. Wants to win now.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no. I think Hannah Montana was I don't want to say the comeback player of the year, but more like just the breakout player of the year in the way that
Hannah Montana. You said Hannah Montana.
That's what I call. That's what we. That's my pet name for. So Hannah McNair was the breakout player of the year, and that nobody really expected it. It wasn't anything. There wasn't you know, 5 years ago, people weren't like, when do you think the year Hannah McNair really breaks out in terms of public popularity? People weren't having that debate, and then all of a sudden, over the course of the last 18 months, she's become a cult hero in Houston. I feel like there's probably at least 7 Hannah McNair. There might be as many Hannah McNair tattoos as there are Hannah Montana tattoos out there.
Tattoos amongst
the
youngsters.
Right now.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
I'm sorry, Hannah. I didn't mean I. you know, laughing. Hannah, you listen to the show. You know how I am with names. I'm sorry.
Knows.
I apologize.
She knows. She knows. Hannah Montana, beloved character. That's all. I mean, she's played by Miley Cyrus, who might be insane, but beloved character, Hannah Montana.
Is Miley Cyrus insane? I thought she knew what she was up to.
She's
not insane. She's just a little wild.
A little
child.
Wild. Yeah, yeah.
She's
maybe
wild?
I'm being hyperbolic. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the family. Oof.
The family is insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
if Hannah McNair, let's say Hannah McNair is her pseudonym for her Nickelodeon pseudonym.
Okay.
Like Hannah Montana,
mm-hmm.
What's the real Hannah McNair like?
Okay,
you mean like what other
like Hannah Montana was Miley Cyrus' pseudonym?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if Hannah McNair is hers
pseudonym, yeah. Then what's her real name?
Does she have a wild side too?
I would maybe. She's, you know, she's a twin.
Yeah.
You know, it's they probably played some twin chicanery back in the day. You know,
they probably
identical
did.
Twins. So I like to think so. I like to think so.
Boy.
And I think the
I feel like I'm sitting down to the SATs for the first time. I still don't understand. I'm struggling with the concept here. But okay, yeah.
I think the fact that she's not afraid to talk a little trash at the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
I think there's some.
She's had a good year.
She had a hell of a year. CJ Stroud, Will Anderson, Hannah McNair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell of a year.
Yeah.
Hell of a year. What's up, Landry?
What's up?
How you doing, man?
I'm great.
Yeah. It's good. Hannah McNair saying, we want to win, man.
We want to win now.
We want to win, and we want to win now. I like the Cal is kind of the yin to the yang.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they should want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast, we are done on a Friday. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you. I will see
antibodies
you
antibodies and 7-round mock drafts to you.
Thank you. I can't wait. All right, we're done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.